Okay, so yesterday I was I listened to a tribute at KJ, Kiryat Yeshurun in the Upper East Side, for Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin, who I mentioned I think last week. Even though he was American, like, you know, born in America, went to Flatbush, you know, lived in America before he made Aliyah. The truth is that a lot of his influence was in Israel, and you know, in America, most likely what people know about him is the fact that he helped start Nishmat with his wife, Rabbanit Henkin. But he really was a very, very important posek, and wrote a tremendous amount on Torah as well. And in this tribute, they were going through, right, what was unique about his halachic contributions, his parshanut, which motivated me to at least do one more parsha thing from him. Because I really do appreciate his Torah a lot, and, you know, I don't, especially since last year, as he really was not doing well health-wise, right? I don't know how many people, Americans, know him well enough. So the one thing that was highlighted was that Rav Henkin really was very, very, very careful with language, and really drew profound insights from being a very careful reader to the nuance in different words, which, you know, are things that you find in people like the Malbim and things like that. So I looked at what he had on Va'ira, and I found that he has a very, I think, careful read of these parshiot that really adds a lot. So I just wanted to share ideas. This is from his... at the back of his tshuvot and several of his svarim, he has what's called Chibaya Teirah, his addendums. They've now published a sefer of his own parshanut on the Torah, but these are some of his shorter comments that are found there. So he notes that consistently throughout the Makot, we talk about different ways in which God's heart is something, right? Something is made, but I don't want to bias it, but whatever, hardened, made more stubborn, whatever the case may be. So he wants to really understand the differences, and we've talked about in the past different ways of understanding it, but let's try his. So he says as follows, Shalosh Lashon Nemru B'Paro. There are three terms that are used to describe the way that Paro becomes more stubborn, okay? Vayichazek. One is, it became stronger. So he says, what does that reveal? He claims it's shepirusho shebikesh shelo laharot chulsha ligana. One type of stubbornness came from the fact that he wanted to show that he was strong and was afraid to give in, which would show weakness. Right? That's one psychological reason why people don't give in, is they view giving in as weakness and they don't want to look weak. So that, he thinks, is captured from Vayichazek. And he notes that Paro's heart is Vayichazeked 10 times, parallel, he thinks, to the Eser Makot. Even though it's not only at the Makot, he thinks parallel to that. Right? One level which permeates everything is that Paro refuses to seem weak. The second point, the second word is Vayichabed. So what does that mean? So it literally means heavy. Right, and we've talked about the possibility in the different, you know, in the past, that maybe Vayichazek means God pushed him in the direction he wanted to, and Vayichabed already is, you know, pushing him away from what he wants to do. Rav Henkin has a different interpretation, which is maybe Vayichabed is not just from the Lashon of heavy, but from honor. And to be fair, those are related, even in English, right? How do we know that honor and weight, heaviness, are related in English? What word do we have that highlights that? Gravitas. Right? Gravitas. Right? That if someone demands respect, he has gravitas. Right? It's from the same word as gravity. Right? There is this idea that honor and weight and heaviness, right, have a relation. So he thinks that Vechabed comes milashon kavod. Because he says the second thing that motivated Paro was that he felt, lohaya ze bechvodo, it's beneath his honor that he, the king, should send away the slaves, right, that he should be beaten by the slaves, right? So vechazek, he doesn't want to seem weak. Vaychabed is he feels it's beneath him. Right? It's beneath his kavod. The third is kasheh, right? Variations on his heart was hard, kasheh. So he says, what kasheh? Kasheh, when it comes to Bnei Yisrael, we're described as kasheh oref, hard of the nape of the neck. But what is the imagery? What does it mean when we say we're kasheh oref, that we're a stiff-necked people? What does that mean? That we're not flexible, right? What? Yeah, we're stubborn in the sense that we don't, shelo ratzal l'shanot midyano kayemet. It's hard to change the path we're on, the policies we're on, right? Change is intrinsically hard, right? Momentum, essentially, right? We follow momentum, we don't want to change. So he says what the psukim are doing by highlighting that sometimes he's vaychazek, vaychabed, and describing him kasheh is highlighting these three psychological reasons that he didn't want to let them go. Vaychazek, he didn't want to seem weak. Vaychabed, he felt it was beneath him to let the slaves go. And kasheh, he simply was going in momentum and he didn't want to change. And then he says, but by all of them, what became kasheh? What became kaved? What became chazak? Lev paro. So he says, okay, well, what is the lev? Lev is always the seichel. Right? It's always the, in Torah, it's not the emotions, right? It's the mind, right? Lev in biblical Hebrew is more the mind. So he said, what that reveals is that Paro pal mitoch shikul hadat, that this wasn't a knee-jerk reaction. He actually made a calculated decision. He may have been motivated by these emotions. He didn't want to feel weak. He felt it was beneath him. But it would be a mistake to think that he didn't weigh it out. The point is that his intellectual faculties themselves were motivated by these three considerations. And therefore, by saying, vaychazek, kasheh kavod, but always saying it by lathe, it's highlighting that no, he actually is making an intellectual choice, flawed, maybe motivated by problematic emotions, but it was a choice. And the Torah wants you to know that it's a choice. And that is part of Paro's crime, is that he allowed these three problematic considerations to shape the decisions he made actively. And Rav Henkin continues in his analysis. That's one piece, but there was one other piece that connected to it, which is the following. He notes that you get these vayichbad lev paro before makat shchin, and before makat kinim, right? By kinim and shchin, he says, why? So he says, if his analysis is right, right, that vaykaved always highlights when Paro is functioning because he doesn't want to do that which is beneath him. He's taking considerations of honor front and center. So then what are the two makot that specifically attacked that quality of Paro? Lice and boils. Because they're just, right? Think about the way we think about people, right? If they're dirty and covered in lice, right, that's just ich, right? That person, right, that cuts at somebody's dignity. And boils also, right? The things that make you look disgusting, your clothes, your hair, your appearance, your skin, right? Those are things that degrade you. People feel like they're losing their dignity. And therefore, he says, once you realize that we're folk, that vayichaved is, Paro is functioning because of kavod, so it makes sense that the makot that most sort of cut at the way a person carries himself, right? It's not true of dam, so you're thirsty. I mean, that's bad, but it's not cutting at the way you hold yourself. But lice and boils are cutting at your ability to hold yourself in a dignified fashion. So once you think that that's what that shoresh, kaved, is referencing, it makes sense that the makot that highlight those are the ones where that word appears. And the last thing he notes, right, and this we've definitely talked about in the past, is that you do have to realize that sometimes vayechazek paro at libo, right, in the earlier makot, it's paro who's being mechazek his own lave, and later on it's Hashem who's being mechazek his lave. We've talked about some of those nuances, but you have to remember that. So I did think that, you know, picking up on what Tova Genzel mentioned, that Rav Henkin really, right, his parshanut drives from these very careful reads of the nuances and words. In this particular case, I think consistently throughout the story, he provides a fascinating perspective on how to view the makot in general. And again, noting, right, just to summarize it, that paro is sometimes said to vechazek, kaved, kasheh, he argues that what is driving paro are three types of considerations. That he doesn't want to seem weak, that he feels like sending the Jews away is beneath him. And simply momentum. He doesn't want to change his policy. But at the end of the day, that's always attached to lave, because the Torah wants you to remember that he's actually making decisions, right? Don't think that he's not making decisions. At the end of the day, it is a choice to follow those motivations, right? And that's why he's culpable, right? To note that sometimes it's purely him making the decisions. Sometimes God is pushing him along. That's true. And to note that to punish him for these attitudes, right, the makot seems to be targeting that, and his argument that at least that kavod one, that it's beneath me, right, the reason that that shoresh comes up specifically in kinim and shchin is because Hashem made certain makot that actually cut at the way people hold themselves to counter paro's commitment to maintaining his honor at all costs. The makot come to resolve that. So those are some of his insights, which I do think they provide a fascinating perspective on Paro's psychology, and hopefully learning some of his Torah will be li'ilui nishmato and will help get out his Torah as widely as it deserves to be. Okay.